Welcome to the San Diego Psychological Association's podcast, Diving into Healing. I'm your host, Dr. Michelle Carcel. This podcast has been developed with the intent to inform and educate the general public and providers and should not be relied upon for any other purpose. The content, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the speaker and not those of the San Diego Psychological Association. Today, we will be talking about the effects of betrayal trauma on romantic relationships. I'd like to welcome our guest, Dr. Alicia Tallarico. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
Yes, this is a very interesting topic. I'm curious, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you were drawn to trauma in this specific genre of trauma?
Yes, so I'm a clinical psychologist at Aton Center, and a previous place of employment, I worked with women who had experienced infidelity by their partners, and that incorporated a lot of different types of infidelity. And I really wanted to dive more into that. And I really just enjoyed working with women and healing in their process.
Oh, that's wonderful. I really appreciate that type of work. And we hear about trauma, right? That's definitely something that, the term is being more and more brought to light. So in many ways, that's incredibly beneficial. But I don't often hear the phrase betrayal trauma. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So betrayal trauma is very specific towards partners. And what happens is that a partner steps out of the relationship and they engage in maybe marital affairs, maybe excessive porn use, some sort of sexual addiction, including hiring sex workers, excessive masturbation without their partner's knowledge. And so this is a huge sense of betrayal that their partners had gone elsewhere for sexual needs, and they're understanding the sex addiction as well as a critical component of this. And there's a huge lack of trust and safety. And we talk a lot about that and trying to figure out this journey together and trying to heal through that. And is it possible to come out the other end? And it absolutely is.
Well, that's good to hear. And yes, you know, this is actually very common in couples work. You know, so when we hear about infidelity or these types of situations, the treatment is really important and it can go very deep. I'm curious about, you know, when we talk about betrayal trauma, are there different types of betrayal trauma?
Yes. So great question. There's a few different types. There's emotional abuse, infidelity, narcissism, and sex addiction.
Can you give us some examples of those?
Yeah. So emotional abuse really entails being put down, being belittled, being criticized, where it makes you feel so small. And if it makes you feel less than, and that that you are not enough, that somebody is constantly putting you down, that you don't feel worthy.
Yeah. And also narcissism, we hear that term a lot, right? But, and I think a lot of people can understand it. We get examples all the time, but being in a relationship with a narcissist, what does that look like?
It is confusing. And I think what's so difficult about that is that we lose a sense of control and power, and somebody is taking that away, and they are maybe choosing all your meals. They're maybe telling you what to wear. They're being very controlling. It's hard to please them because they're maybe going back and forth. Maybe it's grandiosity too, thinking that, you know, you're never going to do any better than me. I'm the best. And it makes you feel to start to believe that I really can't do any better. I might as well just stay in this relationship. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And that can be detrimental because obviously when we're thinking about these topics, it really comes back to the victim feeling or the person in the relationship that's being victimized feeling less than overall, right? And that can be so problematic and is very unhealthy. You also mentioned a few other examples. Can you elaborate on those as well?
Yes. So infidelity is a big one. And that can look different, but similar for several different reasons. So in infidelity, somebody is going outside of that marriage, whether it's an emotional relationship with a person, whether it's a sexual relationship with another person, and it can happen several times. And from my experience working with people in the past, there's more than one affair, and there's more than it's included emotional affairs and sexual affairs with other people. And when coupled with adding to the emotional abuse into the sex addiction, you know, there's just lots of layers there.
This is such a difficult situation, especially for couples or one partner who is discovering a type of betrayal in the relationship, and that can be really jarring. I am curious too, as far as couples and different populations, is there a difference for heterosexual couples versus couples that identify as LGBTQ+ or non-binary?
Yeah. So the research that has been targeted for betrayal trauma has primarily focused on heterosexual couples, given any couple can experience that. So in a lot of the literature, you'll read the pronouns he, him, his, and she, her, hers, and it hasn't quite made it yet to LGBTQ+ community, although we are very aware that this occurs in any sort of couple. And it looks similar. So it doesn't matter what orientation you are, it's betrayal and it's a lack of trust, and it's very damaging.
Of course. Yeah. And that's important that we discuss limitations, right? So when it comes to research and it comes to different information that's being available, that, you know, we're still working on inclusion, and that is very important in the literature and in the research. But I'm glad, you know, that we're currently trying to work on that actively. You know, when it comes to betrayal, I think all of us can identify with that. Everybody has had some form of betrayal in a relationship to some degree, whether it's a little white lie or omitting information, whether it's even with well intention, all the way to something that, you know, can be significant, where it can cause significant trauma and trust issues, whether the couple stays together or they separate, and the individual who's been betrayed, they can have complications from going forward. So this is a very important topic, because I think everybody can identify with this. Is there anything specific that you see as far as themes with people who have been betrayed, and how do they work through that?
One of the great biggest things is discovery. And so what that means is that a partner discovers little bits and pieces here along the way of, oh, their partner's out a little bit later, they're at a work meeting, they're at a work conference, they're out having meeting up with friends. And so they're discovering through these lies, these events that are not occurring. And that can be through text messages and emails and, you know, that initial reaction of, oh, so that didn't happen. Something else was going on. And usually for a lot of times, there's several before confrontation, confronting the issue with their partner, wanting to maybe have some evidence to back it up, not just kind of, well, maybe I'm uncertain. And this is part of the gaslighting as well of their partner. No, don't worry about it. It's minimization and not confronting the issue and making the issue directed onto their partner. So that is a challenge of full discovery and during disclosure that can occur, of really kind of laying everything out there.
And when you're describing that, talking about gaslighting and, you know, themes that come up here, those are very damaging themes. And I think that's important to mention, that there can be a range. So like I was saying earlier, and I'm curious what you think about this, again, having a partner who says a little white lie, you know, I'm thinking of something almost humorous where, you know, you might ask your partner, hey, do I look good in this outfit? And they say, yeah, you look great. But in reality, you're not feeling great. They're wondering about it. You know, so that's one thing, right? That's not exactly a betrayal trauma, but it is something that, you know, it occurs in relationships, all the way to something that you're discussing that is actually very serious. Gaslighting, for example, that is significant. Actually, before I go any further, can you define gaslighting for our listeners?
Gaslighting occurs when there's persistent manipulation, and it's a form of psychological abuse. It may be intentional and it may be unintentional. Often it's intentional. And what occurs is their partner just reminds them of their pitfalls and will put the blame on them and deflecting. Mm-hmm. And so they don't want to look inwards. They're making it, there's something wrong with you instead. There's nothing wrong with me. is making somebody feel uncertain or insecure about themselves. Mm-hmm. You may feel like you're walking on eggshells or you don't want to say the wrong thing because it might be used against you. It gets to a point of being brainwashed and that you can no longer trust yourself because my partner keeps telling me things over and over and over again, and it must be true. Otherwise, they wouldn't be telling me this. And I think that's the most damaging when we lose sense of self through this process and not feeling confident or, you know, the self-esteem gets significantly impaired through this procedure of gaslighting. Gaslighting's been around for a very long time, and to just now know that we can start to normalize it and it just becomes part of who we are. And I think that's learning to trust yourself again can be really difficult.
So I'm curious, we're talking about infidelity, and, you know, a lot of times when we think infidelity, we think of it more as, you know, a sexual infidelity or encounter. I'm curious about the distinction between emotional infidelity versus sexual infidelity and maybe how those two tie together.
Yeah. Emotional infidelity occurs when a partner steps out of the relationship, and it often occurs in a friendship or a coworker, somebody they work with, and they get to know them on a friendly level, and it kind of spirals from there. And maybe it's getting to know each other on a deeper level. They're going to drinks, they're going to conferences together for work. They're getting to know, they know a lot of personal information about one another. And it may not appear on the outside as stepping outside of the relationship, but it definitely can be when you have built that really strong connection where you're no longer talking to your partner and you're noticing, like, I want to talk to this person now about what's going on in my life and letting them in. And I want to know about theirs. And I don't really ask my partner about what's going on in their lives. And noticing that that can transpire into a sexual relationship as well, because oftentimes relationships are built on that emotion and connection, that intimacy. And, you know, when we look at infidelity in a sexual way, that people are stepping outside of the relationship to get their needs met sexually. And whether that's multiple affairs, whether that is through hiring sex workers, and whatever it may be, to whether it's maybe online chat rooms, that is a way of getting their needs met outside of their marriage or outside of their relationship mm-hmm. sexually.
And, you know, it just came to me. I was thinking about some research that I read a while back. So I hope that it's still relevant. It may not be, but I recall that, you know, there was a distinction between when we're thinking about heterosexual relationships specifically. Again, I'm curious to see if this resonates with the LGBTQ+ community and the research there. But I recall that women tend, or people who identify as women, tend to feel more injured by an emotional affair versus a sexual affair, whereas the opposite is true for people who identify as men or who are male, that they're actually more injured by a sexual affair. So it's kind of interesting that there may be gender differences in how they interpret infidelity in the relationship, which is something to keep in mind, you know, not only for a therapist, but for the couple themselves. So for a person who identifies as male and who is, you know, talking to someone who is outside of the marriage and talking about personal things, and it's an emotional affair, that could actually be much more injurious, even though that partner doesn't think it is, to their partner themselves in the marriage and as a whole. So these are things that are just very curious, and it's important to clarify, I think. But I'm glad that you gave those examples. I think that's very important. I also wanted to ask you about sex addiction. Can you give a little bit more information on, you know, what that means and sex addiction's role in a relationship and how that can be very harmful?
Yeah, and it's another level versus if somebody struggles from alcohol addiction or opiate addiction. With sexual addiction, it's compulsive. It's meeting a need. It is on a different level of intimacy. And when people have compulsion to constantly look at porn, look at chat rooms, and when they're, you know, constantly spending a lot of time looking, going up and down the street and driving the street and looking for a sex worker, it is emotionally disturbing and harming for the partner of not understanding, like, and then it doubts themselves, like, well, I thought we had a good sexual relationship, and we, you know, we have sex a few times a week, and we are explore and play around, and oftentimes it's this unmet fantasy that this partner is stepping out and trying to create and exploring that, and that can be very difficult in trying to if the couple is attempting to reintegrate and attempt to have a relationship, at what point do they revisit having sex? And, you know, because boundaries have been made already, and exploring that and what that looks like, because in their minds, it can be what they were doing with sex workers or what they were watching on pornography. And so I think it creates a difficulty becoming intimate again, or even simple touching and caressing and finding that connection. It can be very, very difficult for the partner.
Absolutely. And, you know, just kind of continuing to that point, thank you for that explanation. You know, there's other pieces here. I'm thinking of the research by Drs. John and Julie Gottman that they talk about Horsemen of the Apocalypse in a relationship. And, you know, gaslighting was not included in this, but definitely in you know, more modern research, it definitely is. But, you know, thinking about contempt and criticism, stonewalling, things that are very detrimental in a relationship that will cause a relationship to break. And these things are incredibly hurtful and can really strike the individual who is the victim of this specifically and cause long-term problems in future relationships. This is very important, you know, and important for us to address what this looks like and for people to understand that it's not okay. And I think that's really a key note here. I'm curious, for people who have been victims of this type of manipulation or the more extreme forms of betrayal trauma, how can they keep safe from this and how can they rebuild their own trust in themselves and in others?
One of the biggest things is boundaries and setting boundaries with yourself and setting boundaries with other people, because if we don't have trust within ourselves, then everything we do is uncertain. And so it is, you know, getting a great therapist who is very well versed in this topic, who's trained and has that experience, because this is a trauma like no other, because it encompasses more levels and deeper levels that can go through looking back on previous relationships, looking back on childhood. And so this sense of insecurity is coming through. And so the greatest thing is to set physical boundaries, emotional boundaries, and sexual boundaries with yourself and with your partner.
You mentioned boundaries. Can you give some examples of boundaries in a relationship?
Yeah, I'm going to give you a few examples, actually. So I want to talk about emotional boundaries first. And when we feel like we are being put down, belittled, it is using our voice to say, please do not talk to me like that. You know, as simple as that, if I'm trying to gain control and set a tone that I know I don't deserve to be treated like this, and because I don't want to be, you know, doubt myself and feel like I'm always being put down by this person that I care about. So that would be an example of an emotional boundary. A physical boundary is our physical distance, our proximity to one another. And whether that is we are sleeping in separate bedrooms, whether I'm leaving for a weekend and staying in a hotel, or you leave for the weekend and you need to stay in a hotel or go to a friend's house. You know, setting up some physical boundaries. We're not touching, we're not hugging. I need my space. And it's being assertive and direct and kind, and it's protect yourself. It's all about safety. And then also sexual boundaries. Your partner to get an STD checked, and because they are putting you at risk if they are stepping outside and having sexual infidelity marital relationships. And so you have the right to know and to set those boundaries and to even say sex is off the table and just letting them know direct, because it is keeping yourself safe.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think that's very important for people to recognize that they have empowerment and they can control the situation that a lot of times we feel out of control, or we feel, as you said before, you know, being belittled or being put down. You know, there's a big self-esteem component to this. And, you know, witnessing dysfunctional relationships or thinking that this is normal, people can stay in and not set those boundaries. So I think it's very important that, you know, people who are listening to this, who feel like, you know, they're basically feeling not good enough, or that this is the relationship they're supposed to stay in, that they recognize that's not the case, that they have more power and control than they think they do. And setting boundaries is a very good way to empower themselves and to gain that control. And for people who are in a relationship with more significant betrayal trauma, do you recommend them staying in the relationship, leaving the relationship? How should they proceed?
That is a great question. And it really varies from person to person. And one healthy thing of setting a boundary is a separation, whether that's an in-home separation or out-of-the-home separation. Because if we're in that environment, we can easily get brought back in. And so in order to protect ourselves and to stay safe and to not allow those other, you know, forms of manipulation to occur, we need to set those boundaries. And it's allowing, how close do I allow myself to be with other people, especially my partner? So how in proximity do I want to be to them right now when there's so much anger and hurt and sadness in our hearts? And for some people, I've seen it, they're both in recovery, they're both in treatment, they both are addressing it. They went through formal disclosures and had a whole and individual therapy and couples therapy, and it can work out. And some people, it just can't. And even moving forward, if that's not, they decide to not go forward, even finding the next partner is going to be very difficult. And doing the healing work is going to be really crucial.
I agree. And, you know, it's an interesting time because with the pandemic, you know, most of us think of trauma and we think of things that are quite severe, usually associated with physical trauma. However, emotional and verbal abuse and trauma is equally significant in many ways. You know, there's not really a comparative piece here, but, you know, there's something to be said for being in this pandemic for the last year. A lot of people are reaching out because they've witnessed things or seen things, experienced things, and as you said, discovered things that they didn't see before in their partners, in their relationships. So we're seeing quite a shift with this and with couples work and for, you know, people who need that support, because had this pandemic not happened, they wouldn't have been in close proximity to witness and be more available to the circumstances in their relationships. So this is a very important, as I said earlier, topic. So I'm curious, you brought up boundaries, which I think is very important as well. And, you know, having boundaries with your partners, recognizing when we need help, recognizing that we need to reach out and get that support. What self-care activities do you feel is imperative when it comes to betrayal trauma? What can people do to take care of themselves?
Mm-hmm. I mean, self-care is such an imperative part of this process because, and one is, you know, boundaries are self-care and doing things that make you feel good versus when we're constantly being put down by our partners and made to feel less than or belittled or criticized. We need things to lift us back up and we need a good support system. We need people who we can trust and we can go to who do not judge. And we need to find that in feeling safe with them. And so whether that's a friend, a family member, a therapist, a psychiatrist, like the more people in your corner, the better off you're going to be. A support group. There's plenty of support groups out there. And oftentimes that's the thing. I feel like I'm alone in this. I'm the only one who's experiencing betrayal trauma. And that's not the case. You are not alone. There's other people out there who can provide that comfort and support during times like that.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I'm curious about one piece here. A lot of times when I talk to individuals and there's a case of codependency or, you know, patterns that they've witnessed in their, you know, parents or their caregivers in their upbringing where they have only been around dysfunctional relationships and this is all they know and they feel safe in the dysfunction, How do you approach this, and what recommendations do you have for people who are having a hard time of leaving a relationship that is not healthy for them and that encompasses a lot of betrayal trauma?
Oh boy, this is a tough one because it's so complicated and it's so complex because there is a pattern of dysfunction in their life. And to say that this is not normal, this is not a healthy relationship, is not understood immediately. And with time and with showing love and passion, compassion and understanding and that support to help them kind of guide them through that, I think that's the key thing, is just being patient with them, because we cannot force people out of these relationships. We can try to educate and provide that support, but ultimately it's out of our control sometimes. And so how do we navigate that with them? And being along that journey with them, I think, shows tremendous support and empowerment in acknowledging that you can get through this with guidance, with professionals' help, with support group, with friends, that you're not alone in it. And it may be over time people pointing this out that, I'm worried about you. I'm concerned about you. To me, this doesn't seem like a healthy, safe relationship. Let's kind of deep dive into what would that look like for a healthy, safe relationship, and explaining that with them and giving them time and space.
Right. In order for them to kind of use their own process to get to the space that they need to feel safe in leaving and really witnessing that they're part of a dysfunctional situation or a codependent situation or whatever the relationship is that's unhealthy, that they're able to get there on their own. I think that's pertinent. I'm curious if you have any specific information or advice for people who are struggling with betrayal trauma, who have been injured in their relationship, things to do, just kind of bullet points. I know we've gone over a few things here, but things that they can reference at this point in time.
Yeah, there are plenty of books and resources out there. If you just went and look on Google betrayal trauma, a lot will pop up. And there's a lot of community. And I think because of this specific type of trauma that people go through, that they've really found their niche throughout the country, providing spaces for other people to heal. And I think that is a good start. Also, a good start is to find a good therapist. And that takes time. And in knowledge and awareness of what to really look for. I can provide some resources in detail afterwards, and provide those book resources as well. You're not alone in this, and it's a scary thing to go through, but coming out the other end is possible, and finding self-love and acceptance and knowing your worth and value is part of that journey. And to know that it takes time and patience.
Yes, I completely agree. And we'll make a note to make those resources available. Well, this has been so informative. Is there anything you'd like to add?
Yes, I would like to add that feeling empowered, feeling that you are back in control, knowing that you have a voice, using that voice, it is all possible with good support and coming out the other end as a different person who acknowledges their worth and their self-esteem. And so I think we are here to help you and to guide you through that process.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And just like you said, that you're not alone. If you've experienced something like this, that there are resources available. You know, we are here to help as a community, and hopefully, guide folks who are listening that might be going through this and suffering, that they are able to get the help that they need. So thank you so much. We really appreciate you being on the show, and we will make your information available for upcoming sessions and upcoming interviews that we do, and also for people who are interested in contacting you directly.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. The information and advice offered is not intended to treat or diagnose and is not meant to replace any other professional consultation. If you'd like to know more about the San Diego Psychological Association, go to our website at sdpsych.org. That's sdpsych.org. Thank you so much for tuning in. Until next time, take care of yourself and be well.